Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rail, hip hop.
Bringing voices to power.
Okay, in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece, I talk with candidate for U.S. Senate Ron Crumpton, who is running because he feels politicians should represent the people, and that's why he's running for this seat. Ron is a 47-year-old father of one. He is a patients' rights advocate and executive director of the Alabama Patients' Rights Coalition and the Alabama Safe Access Project, ASAP. Okay, these organizations are pushing to change laws regarding patient rights here in Alabama. Ron has experience with lobbying in the Alabama legislature. He has testified in the joint hearing of the Senate and House Judiciary Committees on sentencing reform. And he speaks with members on both houses of the legislature on a regular basis. He has authored several pieces of legislation currently filed in the Alabama House of Representatives. After years as an activist, Ron decided the only way to change the government is from the inside. Okay, first thing I want to say is Richard Shelby has been in office since the 1970s, and this is the first time we got a real good chance to get him out of there because he hasn't faced real opposition yet. We know he had the Marine who challenged him in his primary, and he tried to paint that Marine as a con man when actually Richard Shelby himself may be the biggest con man in Alabama, because you could just look at his wealth and the question marks about where his wealth comes from relating to the bills and houses that he sit on. Okay, welcome to the show, Mr. Crompton. How's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm just sitting here trying to educate a lot of listeners and myself as well as to how big are the stakes in this election. First, you can tell us, you know, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, but after that, I want you to get into how big are the stakes in this election.
Okay. First of all, I need to update my profile. I'm 48.
okay.
You said 47 earlier, so I guess I need to update my profile.
Well, you don't look neither one. How about that?
Well, you're being entirely too kind and probably a little bit dishonest. But
well, I do know elections can aid you.
Yeah, this is true. I know President Obama looks about 20 years older than he did when he went in. You did a pretty good job of covering it as far as who I am. The election is everything. This election is by far the craziest I think I've ever seen, and I think just about anybody who keeps up with it would say the same thing. And it's really sad that after all this time in this country, this is probably one of the most volatile elections that we've had. You'd think we'd be getting better at it instead of worse. But, everything is so important with this election. We definitely need to take back the Senate. President Obama has done a fairly good job as president. And where he's had his shortcomings have largely not been his fault. It's been because he can't get cooperation in the in Congress.
That's going to be pretty hard to get when the very night that he was being inaugurated, that they were meeting and agreeing with each other to oppose everything that he tried to do. If Obama was for it, they had to be against it, even if it help the country.
Yeah, and that's what we've been dealing with the last the last 8 years, and there's a lot of things that people like to try and blame on the president. It just really isn't his fault. But considering the fact that he's had such a an obstructionist Congress, he's actually done a very fine job. But we need to do better than just doing a fine job. We need to make strides. We've got to, the Republicans talk about it all the time, but we've got to protect the courts. The upcoming president is going to probably get to appoint as many as 3 Supreme Court justices. That's an important factor in this election, because that goes forward for the next 20, 30 years, and not just the next 4 years. So it's real important that if Senator Clinton's in office, it's important that she has people in the Senate who can support her. Her programs, and it's even more important that if somehow Donald Trump manages to rebound, that we've got senators in office that'll stand up to him. And that's one thing I've never been afraid to do. Sometimes I've been accused of standing up a little bit too quick, but I've never been never been accused of not standing up. So.
And just for my listeners,
if he's elected, we're going to need people in there to fight.
Yes, and we believe that you're just a man for the job. Just for my listeners, and what Ron is talking about is the Supreme Court. These judges are going to be in there for generations. So that's very important on that level. But we also got to think about all the from the Supreme Court, with not just Hillary Clinton, but we got to think also down ballot with people like Ron. You don't want somebody coming in there like Trump. He would want to put in. He has mentioned Judge Pryor to going to the Supreme Court, and we know what type of danger that is, because you got the Pryor, the Fuller, and yes, the Shelby connection. We got to look at all that right there, and how our Justice Department got corrupted, and how Don Siegelman was railroaded. So, when it comes to appointing judges, we got to be very, very vigilant, and we got to make sure that judges like Fuller, who's now disgraced, and judges like Pryor don't end up with a promotion. He should not end up with a promotion with his business dealings he did in Alabama about sealing those ballots and threatening to put anybody in jail who unsealed them or looked at them. So that's the danger we face. And that's probably why you have Jeff Sessions blowing Trump's horn all the time. And that's why he's sticking by Trump, is because he's probably trying to push for Pryor to get in this. And Richard Shelby would be walking right along there with him.
I don't know about that. I think to be honest with you, I think Jeff Sessions is just blowing his own horn. He's always thought that he'd get a position in the Trump administration, and I think that's his primary concern.
Yeah, that's always the primary. But I'm looking at Trump's list, and on that list,
Judge
Bill Pryor. What better people would he have on his side making that happen than another Alabamian by the name of Richard Shelby?
Oh yeah. The sad thing is about his list of judges is that I read through his list of judges, and probably about a third of them I'd never heard of, and the other two thirds reading it just literally scared the hell out of me. We can't let this man, have that kind of, command over the future of this country. That's just ridiculous. And aside from that, you've got Senator Shelby, who is just not doing anything at all for the people of Alabama. If you go on Open Secrets and look it up, you'll find that Richard Shelby sponsors the fewest bills of any senator in Washington. He has the fewest co-sponsors for his bills, and he co-sponsors the fewest number of other people's bills out of anybody in Washington. If you look at the bills that he sponsors, they're all aimed at doing one thing, and that's making rich people richer and poor people poor. He wants a flat tax that's been demonstrated time and time again that it would mean a tax break of about $200,000 a year for the richest 1%. The next four richest percent, the rest of the top 5% would get a average tax break of about $58,000, and everybody else would see their taxes go up. He's pushing legislation that would basically disassemble the Dodd-Frank provisions that were put in place, after the recession to protect our economy from, the big banks. He's wanting to strip that out. The bill he's put forward, he tries to say that it's to reduce excessive regulation on the small banks, but it's been studied by a couple of different institutes, and they all say that his bill would 90% of it would only apply to the top 8 to 10 largest banks in the country. So, he's not working for the people of Alabama. We've got
no, he's not, and he's the last.
We've got What's that? But he's got, you know, we live in a state right now where 45% of single parents are living in poverty. We've got 398,000 children, receiving food stamps. We're 59th in education, and he's not doing anything to address those issues. So, you know, I think, you know, the claim that he's doing anything for Alabama is just easily disputed. All he does is brag to standing up to Obama every single day. And when he does that,
he's usually standing up for a selfish reason. Remember he held up operations once until he got something he wanted into the bill. And I didn't that circle around to some kind of way he was connected to it. He wanted some type of army contract or something he was holding up progress for. And, for his own selfish benefit.
Oh, yeah.
He's not working for the people of Alabama. He's working for himself.
Yeah, at one time, it was 5 or 6 years ago, there was over 7 appointees that he was holding up to, you know, get his way on something. And, you know, that might be one thing. There might be an argument for that if he was fighting for something, you know, that would benefit the people of his state, but that's just not the case. It's usually fighting for something for the defense contractors or the banks or, you know, someone of that nature. So, and
that's very true, and that's how he's become. Isn't he one of the richest senators in Washington, if not the richest? I know he's in the top.
No, he's not the richest. I know that. I'm not sure where he would fall on the list. I know he'd be fairly well up there, but I'm not sure. So I'm not going to comment on where.
Yeah.
But he has, you know, he has got rich during his time in Washington. That's for certain.
yeah, with little to show for it back in Alabama.
Yeah, he seems to be getting a better deal than what the people of the state are out of his terms in Washington. So, he stands, like you said, most of the time that he stands up to the president, he's, you know, not doing something, you know, that he should be standing up for. The Republicans, you know, it's like you said, it doesn't matter if you're for it. If Obama's for it, we've got to be against it. And I'm sorry, but if you're standing up to the president just to be standing up to the president, even when you agree with him, then you're not working in the best interest of the people who elected you.
No.
And, you know, he talks about veterans, how he, you know, he's fighting for veterans. But the simple fact is that over the last 6 years in this term, he's voted against every piece of legislation that dealt with providing educational benefits to our veterans, and he's voted against every piece of legislation that would have improved the care for our wounded warriors. So, you know, for him to get up there and claim that, you know, he's working for veterans, that's just an outright lie. there's really no other way to put it.
That's true.
It's really, you know, pitiful that's the reason he doesn't want to debate me. He knows that the rhetoric that he's been spewing out there just doesn't match up with the record of what he's actually done. And if he got into a debate, somebody would point that out. So, you know, the logical conclusion for him is not to get involved in a debate. There was actually, you know, an event scheduled at the University of Alabama the other day that was nothing more than a campaign event for him. It was supposed to be here in the next day or so, but I called the university, or I didn't call the university. I emailed the university and, you know, asked them, you know, what was up. I thought it was a little one-sided, and 2 days later, I heard back from them, and rather than giving both of us equal time, they canceled the event. And, you know, while the lady from the University of Alabama denied it to the Anniston Star, you'd have a hard time convincing me that that wasn't just a case of Richard Shelby running like a scalded dog. So, you know, it's interesting. It's one thing, you know, to get out there and have to fight for votes, but it's, you know, it's a little bit different when you're having to fight some of the biggest organizations in Alabama for,
just equal time.
So,
Well, I can imagine that he has the pharmaceutical companies behind him.
He's got pharmaceutical companies. His biggest ones though are, you know, the financial services group, which, you know, he chairs the banking committee. So to me, that's just wrong to begin with. He's, you know, take all this money from the people that he's charged with representing, and he was, I mean, that's all it is. It's hard to, you know, to push regulations down somebody's, you know, push regulations on somebody when you're just taking millions and millions and millions of dollars from them. So, but he's got the financial services community, you know, the big banks, the big insurance companies that do trading, like MetLife and those kind of groups. He gets a lot of support from, you know, the defense industry. And I think that's one thing that for some reason he believes when he talks about veterans that being good for the defense industry and being good for veterans is the same thing, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, that's definitely not the case.
Yeah, but
there's,
you know,
been a few bills passed in the Senate that hurt veterans. I'd be interested to see how many times he went against the interest of the veterans.
In the last 6 years, we can't find an instance of him doing anything for veterans. You know, it wasn't him, but that made the comment. But he stood by Jeff Sessions when Jeff Sessions called our veterans an entitlement that we couldn't afford. So. Yeah, we've got a couple of class guys representing us in Washington.
Yeah, but yet he's sucking the tit of defense contractors and pushing for intervention all over the place, but doesn't want to take care of them once they get back. That's not a friend to veterans in my opinion.
No, that's you're absolutely right about that. He's never been shy about supporting any kind of foreign military invasion, with the exception the only time I think I've seen where he opposed any type of military incursion was when we didn't intervene in Darfur. So you know, it's really, you know, sad that this man has represented the state for the last 30 years in the Senate and 8 years before that in the House, and most people just don't realize that, you know, he's not doing anything for us. And it's really even sadder at this point in time that he's wanting to run again for another 6-year term, you know. It's time that, you know, he passes the torch on to somebody else, because
exactly,
you know,
exactly. We have that same kind of Yeah, I'm just going to say we have that same problem in our community. Sometimes our leaders don't know when to pass the torch. They get too comfortable. They get too entitled by the position that they don't want to leave.
They just can't let it go
because I feel and I guess that's just a disease that happens in politics, because I have seen that as nonpartisan, because I myself think that Joe Reed should have been gone. He's another one that's not passing the torch, that's got the whole party messed up. But that's for another story there. What are some of the things you're hearing on the campaign trail that people are mostly, the common person is mostly disappointed with Richard about?
Well, most of the things that I'm hearing is Social Security. Richard has voted repeatedly to turn Social Security into a voucher system, which is privatizing it. He wants, to use that money to hand over big profits to his buddies in the financial community, because that's where, a lot of it would go. He wants to raise the retirement age to 70. We live in a state where we have the seventh highest rate of seniors living in poverty, and we don't need a senator who's wanting to play games with Social Security. We need somebody who will protect it, and that's why I say that we need to remove the tax on the FICA taxes, so that someone that makes over $118,000 a year will still have to pay taxes on that overage. Right now there's a cutoff at $118,500 a year. But we need to remove that, and just by doing that and requiring, the rich to pay their fair share into this, we can ensure that Social Security will be solvent for at least the next 60 years, and we would be able to raise benefits by as much as 50%. So, it's not like the solutions aren't out there. The veterans, that's been an issue. And education, which, education is the one that you're going to hear about in any election that you run for. I mean, if you're running for coroner, somebody's going to ask you about your thoughts on education. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
You're right,
if you're
about
running
that.
For office, that's a question you're going to have to ask. Answer.
You're right.
But
what are some differences between you and him, and what's going on right now in Alabama with the Medicaid crisis we're having? Because we're having a Medicaid crisis.
Yeah.
Would you be for the Affordable Care Act, commonly smeared as Obamacare? Would you be are you in favor or against that, or are you in the camp that believes we can make it better?
Well, not really any of them. I'm in the camp that I believe that the Affordable Care Act was an important first step, but it doesn't go far enough, and it still depends on the insurance companies, and they've proven time and time again that they're not willing to work to fix the problem. That they're wanting the Republicans to repeal Obamacare so things will go back to the way it was. But
maybe that's why they never came up with a plan to say exactly what it is they would do. They just wanted to go back, like you said, back to where it was.
Yeah, well, I personally think we need to move to a single-payer form of insurance.
Yes, I totally agree. I totally agree.
That way, it would be simple. Everybody would have insurance. Everybody would pay into it. It would be a portion of it. There would be about a 3% tax on wages for the employee and about 4% on for employers. and the 95% of Americans would wind up spending less on health care. If you get sick, you can go to the doctor. There's no copay. You'd even get your medicine for free. It doesn't do us any good to have a sick populace, and a lot of the people in this country are sick.
Because they
don't have the availability of preventative care, and that costs us millions and millions of dollars. And it's in everybody in this country's best education. Interest to ensure that everybody's educated and everybody's healthy, because having an educated, healthy populace will drive the economy.
Yes, it will.
That's one thing. Education is so important, because the days of being able to make a good living with a strong back and a weak mind have passed us by. We need to make education a priority, not just during the high school and college years, but from the cradle to the grave, so that people who are displaced that due to the times their career doesn't really even exist anymore, so that those people don't fall into the cracks, that we can help get them back into something where they can make a good living. But the days, like I said, the days of just having a strong back are gone. We've lost so many manufacturing jobs, and we can do a lot to slow that down and a lot to prevent it. But when you look at it over the long term, the simple fact is that muscle jobs are going to go where muscle labor is cheapest, and that's not here. So, we need to angle our workforce at being a more of a technological workforce, and that takes education.
Yes, it does. And as far as like you just said, the manufacturing, I think we can bring some manufacturing back to Alabama, and that's what
I was
going to ask.
Well, we can bring some back, and we can do
some things. Some of the new wave things too, such as making products from hemp. I know that we had Representative Johnson from here in Lawrence County, and they had Busman over in Cullman. Those two Republicans, they were looking at the idea of industrial hemp, even though I'm the type of advocate that thinks we should go all the way, not just the industrial. We should just do something in the model of Alaska or Colorado. But we need to be – we can manufacture that, because we have the perfect land in a lot of places in Alabama to really capitalize. We grow a lot of corn here, and if you can grow corn, it's an excellent place to grow hemp. Now, I've seen a study where they were using the hemp plant to help the problem, the polluted soil around Fukushima and in Russia, in some of the places where they, like Chernobyl and stuff like that, because it can replenish the soil. And I know people in Lawrence County, my county, could understand with this, because we just had the situation with the water being contaminated and toxic bypass products being dumped as sludge into fields. So, we know that's a fact. So we should be doing something innovative with that also. But
well,
too many people.
But
yeah, I was just gonna say we're putting too many. Go ahead. We got a little lag in the voice, so it's okay to go ahead and talk over me.
There are they have been making building materials out of hemp for years, and the studies that they've showed on them shows that if a house built out of hemp compared to a house built out of normal materials has a smaller carbon footprint, because the house actually filters a lot of the bad things out of the air. You see what I'm saying? Hemp acts as a natural filter. The same reason that it works with the nuclear problems and stuff that you talk about. So it's one of the most environmentally friendly plants on the planet. You can make everything out of it, from building products to paper to cloth, plastics. I don't know if you've seen them, but they've got cars now that are built almost totally out of hemp. I mean, all the metal's been or fiberglass has been replaced with a hemp fiberglass, which they can make a hemp fiberglass composite.
Yeah, it's 100 times stronger than steel.
Yeah, and it costs less to produce than regular fiberglass because you don't have to produce the glass to begin with.
You're just so
and you know, there's all kinds of things that it can be used for that are more environmentally friendly. Like paper is one of the biggest ones you get over time. You get six times as much paper out of an acre of hemp than you do out of an acre of trees. If you count the you know, the amount, you know, it takes 15 years to grow a set of trees. If you count all the crops that you have come in from the hemp over 15 years, it creates six times more paper. If you there's a lot of things that just make more sense, you know, to go with hemp because
Does. And that brings me to my next.
Biofuels is another one. It makes about four times as much biofuel from hemp as you can from corn. So,
And the decriminalization,
it's something that we really need to be investing in for our future.
We need to be investing in it because in, I believe it was 1943, the government was the Department of Agriculture was talking about investing a lot into hemp. As far as the hempcrete, you know, with lime, water, and hemp, they said this stuff can last 100 years above ground. And it also keeps the inside temperature at a comfortable, like, 70. So you're going to be fighting these electric company monopolies also, too. They're going to be some of the fighters against using hemp. And especially the problem we have with all these plastics. I'm drinking a bottle of water right now. How many years is it going to take this bottle of water to dissolve? But the plastic made from hemp, it takes far, far, far less than that. It's very biodegradable. And so we could solve a lot of problems once we get to that. And not to mention the prison reform, you know, we could reduce the prison population and get these people their rights back. I just do not like people's rights being taken because of a plant. And once they do time, they're going to have trouble getting a job. They're going to have trouble getting residence because of this plant, and they will no longer be able to vote. I mean, do we really want to do this for a plant that's been in use for well over 5,000 years? We want to lock people up. And in 1611, you could get fined if you didn't grow enough hemp. But now we're locking people up in mass about hemp. And we could go on and on about the hemp and the cannabis oil. There's significant health benefits and all this. We'll talk about that in another show as well. But right now I want to hear how people can contact you, help your campaign, donate, and just keep up with what you're doing.
It's not too hard. You can look me up on Facebook and Twitter by Ron Crumpton. Our website is crumptonforalabama.com, all one word. Or you can just Google Ron Crumpton, and you know the website and the Facebook and Twitter's the first things that pop up. So, it's not hard. The easiest way to find everything really would probably be just to Google Ron Crumpton. And I'm not the guy that's got the siding company in North Carolina. The rest of it should be me.
Yeah. That's good. I want to encourage everybody that are listening to go out and, you know, support Ron. Make sure you show up to vote. Now, I tell people this, too, and since it's mostly like a grassroots show, I say this anytime I have a politician on. even if your rights have been taken, you still can do your job by encouraging at least three people. You study the issues, and you if you find you somebody, because we all know somebody in a group of people who really don't care about politics, who don't even vote, who don't give nothing about it, but they could vote if all they did was sign up and go vote. So if you know somebody like that and you support Ron, even though you don't have your rights, encourage at least three people to go and defend and speak for you at the polls. You can at least do that. Just don't give up because your rights are taken. Go out and encourage.
And get your rights back. Most people can.
Yeah,
most people don't know that.
Back.
Yeah, most people can, as long as if you've been arrested for whatever it is, and as long as you've served your sentence and all paroles and probations, and you're through with the court ordered stuff, and if your crime wasn't something of moral turpitude, which is murder, rape, you know, that kind of thing, then you can get your rights back. And if you go to I can't think of the name of them now, the Alabama I pulled a blank. I feel like Gary Johnson.
You get your voting rights. Just Google voting rights restoration. I'm having like a Rick Perry moment too. I could name a few of them, but
yeah,
I can't name the one you're talking about. But
the
just
one that
Google
sues everybody, not the Southern Poverty Law Center, but the AFL-CIO.
Yeah.
That's who I was trying to get to, the AFL-CIO. No, not the AFL-CIO. That's a union. But anyway, you can get your rights back. If you contact me, I'll put you in touch with them, because I do have that information. I am just brain dead at the moment. But you can get your rights back as long as you finished all your fines and everything. You can contact them, fill out a form, and I've got a form that you can fill out, and you won't have to do anything else. They'll take care of it. So. But that's something that's not going to help me, because you're not going to be able to do it between now and the election. But you need to do it for the future, because, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that we're not going to be back fighting this same kind of thing again, you know, with a presidential candidate like Donald Trump. And we need, you know, every able body that we can get. So
yes, that is so true. Well, with that, it's been a great show talking with you, and wish you the best of luck. And I want to encourage my listeners out there. You know, I definitely support Ron Crompton, but you do the research on your candidates, and make sure you get out and vote. And like we said, fight to get those voting rights back. And also, if you're not able to make this one, make sure you're calling people that you know are registered and get them to the polls. Tell them to do it for you, because you speak for you, because you at the moment you can't speak for yourself. So you got to encourage everybody else to get out, because it's so important. This is
okay, I
want to
say this so I don't look as stupid as I did. It was the ACLU is what I was trying to think of, not the
okay.
If you contact the ACLU on their website, they have a form that you can fill out, and they'll take care of everything.
Okay. Well, all right. We'll be in touch, and I look forward to talking to you more in the future.